Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of OAM TV. This is our part two in our series with ASUS. Welcoming back Jeff Gazier from ASUS. Hey to everybody, Jeff. Be nice.
Hey, everyone.
Awesome. So last episode, we talked about the Strix X99 gaming motherboard, right, which is a killer motherboard for gaming. But if gaming isn't your focus and you're looking for something more in the line of being productive with your machine, like who even does that anymore? But Jeff assumes that some people still want to be productive with a desktop. We do have the X99 Deluxe 2, which is the top of the line prosumer motherboard you can get right now. It's killer, right? So I'll let Jeff go ahead and give the elevator pitch for that. So tell us about why would I want an X99 Deluxe 2, Jeff?
Because it's the best X99 motherboard you can buy, basically. I mean, that's the Deluxe has always been a top of the line of what we call our signature series. So these are boards basically made for everybody. And they're not kind of the super high-end workstation boards that we have that's made for doing, you know, hardcore CAD with very specific, you know, validation lists for specific workstation cards. This is more a product for kind of your prosumer, content creation, people who don't need kind of big iron workstation gear, but still need the power that you get from those CPUs, you know, for stuff like video encoding or photo editing or 3D rendering. And what the X99 platform and really sort of building your own PC gives you is access to the latest hardware and the most powerful chips. So instead of, you know, if you were going with a standard desktop or maybe something kind of in the Mac Pro line where you have to wait for the company to update when new hardware becomes available,
and I'm stuck with what I got,
are kind of limited sometimes. You know, making this motherboard available and letting people build their own systems around it lets people jump on the latest stuff when it's available, which right now is Intel's new Broadwell E processors. These are derived from their server class Xeon chips. It's basically a high-end desktop version of one of their server chips. And what's new with this generation is you pack 10 cores and 20 threads into a single socket, which is, you know, 2.5 times what you get in the fastest or in the best standard desktop chip, which is a quad-core 8-thread chip. And that's, you know, if you're doing multi-threaded applications or multi-threaded work in kind of video and image editing and things like that, it's a huge performance increase that allows you to get a lot more work done a lot quicker. So maybe you don't have to spend as much time working and can, you know, do a little gaming on the side, or because you have all of these cores, you know, start playing games while you're encoding a video at the same time. You know, there's no reason to hold back. So we came out with these new X99 motherboards kind of in celebration of this new chip from Intel. And we built some systems based on it, including this sort of hardcore prosumer workstation that sort of epitomizes what you can do now in terms of putting together a really powerful PC that, you know, isn't kind of that button-down business class that you might get from a pre-built builder. This is something that you can customize very, very easily and also make it as good at gaming as it is at, you know, crunching through whatever work you've got to do.
Right, right. And an important piece to mention, which you totally did, Jeff, is that by building my own PC with these motherboards, it gives me the freedom to, when something new launches, because tech ages like bananas, guys. Yeah, whenever that new GPU launches, right, I don't have to worry about anything being soldered to anything. I just go in, whip out what I want and replace it with what I want, right, which I love. So let's go ahead and talk about the insane build. I said it was insane last episode, guys. This is ridiculous. Let's go ahead and talk about the insane build you guys did with the X99 Deluxe 2.
Yeah, so we started with the motherboard, which is our sort of top of the line, all the bells and whistles. It has sort of the most extensive storage support, the most ports, the most slots, the most extra stuff that comes with the board. So we've got everything from sort of USB 3.1 to Thunderbolt 3 to U.2 and M.2 for storage. So basically all of the standards and buzzwords that you've heard, you know, bantered around in, you know, nerdy tech discussions, this board has. And then we loaded it up with the best components that we could find. So on the CPU side, that's the new 10-core Core i7 6950X.
Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes get those model numbers confused. But basically, it's top of the line. It's a $1,500 chip, 10 cores in a socket. It's, you know, it's a spectacular chip. Just pulling up the Windows Task Manager and seeing those 20 individual CPU utilization graphs, that's, for me, that's worth the
price
all on its own. There is a little bit of a caveat with a chip like that, though, because you have so many cores on a chip, it's actually really hard to cool. Although this fits into the same 140-watt thermal envelope as the last generation, you've got two more cores than previously, and that makes cooling especially important, especially if you want to overclock, which we did with this build. So on the cooling side, we use one of Corsair's H110 liquid coolers. It has really big dual-fan radiator, dual 140-millimeter fans, so it keeps the CPU nice and cool, even when it's clocked well beyond its stock speeds.
Awesome.
So in terms of other components, another big thing with this platform is memory bandwidth. These chips have quad-channel memory controllers, so you get basically twice the memory bandwidth that you do in normal Core i7 chips. What we've done here is we've loaded it with some DDR4 memory from Corsair. Now, we've only put 32 gigs of RAM into this, but the platform
only 32.
Supports up to 128, which is, you know, if you're working with, you know, really large, you know, 4K videos and things like that, the extra memory does make a difference for those guys.
Yeah.
And we have some actual special enhancements just in even how the traces are laid out on the board to optimize the signal timing when you have all the slots populated. Some other boards, if you only populate half the slots, you can reach a higher memory speed than if you fill them up. But in a platform like this, we figure people are going to be loading it with memory. So we actually tweak the trace layout, it's called ASUS T topology, to optimize the signal timing. So if you want to load it up with memory, you don't actually have to reduce the speed.
That's awesome. That is insane. So let's talk about graphics. What graphics card did you guys use in this build?
For this, we used the Strix GTX 10 or 980, which is it's a high-end card. It was really, really impressive when we spec'd this system out, and then NVIDIA went and it launched its new GTX 1080, which is kind of the successor to this card, which is much faster. It has a bunch of new technologies and enhancements, especially for VR.
Outclocks the Titan,
Yeah, if you were going to build something today, I'd say swap the 980 that we've got in here for our new Strix 1080, which is kind of the same class of card, but just updated with all the latest technologies that we've got. So it's got, you know, RGB lighting on the card that you can configure. It's got some extra features for cooling, so you can plug system fans directly into the GPU. That way the system cooling reacts to graphics temperatures. If you're, you know, playing games and you have a higher GPU load than what's on your CPU, or even if you're doing some of the, you know, kind of the number crunching that people are now running on GPUs instead of on their CPU. It basically allows you to just have more intelligent system cooling for the graphics card.
That's so awesome. So I know I know it's less of a concern here because this is less of, well, last episode, obviously, we were totally focused on gaming and gamer. Well, I, as a gamer, love lighting, right? But you guys still kept it sexy. You still made sure to have some lighting going on. So cable management and lighting are like the bane of my existence whenever I'm building a new machine, right? So how did you guys go about and, make that lighting so smooth and suave?
Well, part of it is just the board itself. So we've got three independent lighting zones on the board.
Okay.
There's some around the audio, there's some around the chipset cooler, and there's some on the PCI Express slots. And through our Aura software, those are all configurable independently. So you can set, you know, a different color and effect for each one, or you can synchronize them all together. And then on top of that, we have a 4-pin header on the motherboard that's compatible with off-the-shelf 50-50 RGB strips. Can supply power to up to 2 meters of lighting with sort of optimal brightness. We use some cable mods, wide beam magnetic strips on this build, which are super easy to put inside of a case. They've got big magnetic backs, so you can stick them to any metal part of your case and daisy chain them together very easily. You know, what we try to do with this system, lighting is not maybe something that you'll find in a workstation all the time, but there's no reason an expensive system shouldn't look good.
Right?
You know, you don't have to have the crazy rave flashing effects. You can very easily, you know, set a consistent color, kind of a lower brightness, and get something that has this nice subtle glow. Or you can use it to match other system components. Let's say even, you know, RGB LEDs are in everything these days, or everything has an LED that glows a certain color, and it's, you know, a system looks a lot nicer when they're all the same. And there's some sort of cohesion with it. And what we've actually done is, as part of our Aura software, we have a whole bunch of components that have RGB LEDs. And through software updates, what we're doing is we're allowing them to synchronize the lighting across multiple components. And you'll see that first with the graphics card and the motherboard, where you'll have the lighting on both be the same color, the same effects, and the ability to synchronize them so they're always matching.
I personally am a fan of breathing, guys. I love my LEDs to just fade in and fade out. It's great. Cool. So that was completely tangential. Had nothing to do with anything.
Well, but if you want to bring it back, though, we can bring the lighting into it, because we do have an effect that'll actually reflect the CPU temperature of your system. So if you want to sort of keep an eye on system load, you can set the LEDs to change color based on how hot your processor is running. So there is kind of a functional aspect to it if you want to justify it that way.
That's what you lead with, Jeff. That's what I'm going to tell people. This is why I have all these. This is why I have all my LEDs. So I can know what's going on. Yeah. Awesome. This motherboard is killer. Literally the best of the best, right? So it handles any workload I can throw at it. That I can think of throwing at it, right? Media encoding, if you do a lot of things with emulation, I deal with tons of emulators all the time, right? And so I need more RAM. Just more RAM. How much RAM? More RAM. So is there anything? Oh, let's talk about your dual U2 ports, U.2 ports.
Yeah, this is kind of a different thing on this board. First of all, you don't find U.2 ports on a lot of motherboards, and second, you usually don't find two of them. What U.2 is basically just a physical interface for PCI Express SSDs. So you can get those in M.2 or U.2 form usually. M.2 is that little gum stick that plugs right into a slot on the motherboard. Almost looks kind of like a stick of RAM. And then U.2... it actually looks like a traditional SSD. It fits into a standard 2.5-inch bay. And if you look at drives like the Intel 750 series, it basically looks like a hard drive with a heatsink on it. Now, the important thing is that heatsink. When you have an M.2 drive, it's very, very small. And because that standard was designed for notebooks, there's really no accounting for additional cooling. And often the slot on the motherboard is positioned somewhere where you can't fit a heatsink or put an extra fan. What U.2 does is it moves all that flash memory onto this drive where you can put in a standard cage, like the 750 series drives that we're using has a heatsink attached already, and you can put it somewhere in a case where it gets airflow. And that's important because, you know, numerous tech sites have done testing. I've done some testing with these M.2 drives, and if you put a sustained load on them, they will eventually start to slow down as they heat up. They've got an internal throttling mechanism that basically prevents the drives from overheating.
But you lose performance.
Yeah, in doing so, you lose performance. And we figure if you're buying a fancy PCI Express SSD, you're doing it for the performance.
You want to maintain
that performance. So that's why with this board, we put two U.2 ports on there in addition to an M.2 slot and even a separate add-in card that you can use to add another M.2 drive versus via one of the full-size PCI Express slots. So with dual U.2 ports on the board, we were able to equip the system with two 750 series drives, one for, you know, sort of a system and operating, one is a system drive for the OS, application, games, and then the other as a scratch disk for sort of content creation if you want to just dump all the videos you're working on onto a single drive and not have access to it affected by anything else. We've got a dedicated drive for that. And then on top of those, because mechanical storage is kind of still the way to go if you need a lot of capacity, and, you know, especially if you're working in content creation with massive 4K videos, you're not going to be able to fit all of your work, especially your archives and backups, onto an SSD. So we've got dual 6-terabyte Western Digital Black hard drives in this system. And there's lots of room to add more. The board actually has 10 SATA ports. So if you want to put a massive RAID array in there, you're set for doing that. Another thing I should also bring up, too, is the U.2 ports. If you look at Intel standard desktop platforms, so that'll be kind of the Core i7 6700 class processors and motherboards based on Z170, they have a lot less bandwidth compared to X99 and these Broadwell E chips. Broadwell E's top-of-the-line processor has 40 PCI Express lanes compared to only 16 on the standard desktop chip. So that basically gives you more connectivity for these PCI Express SSDs or multiple graphics cards, whereas on other platforms, if you're going to put that many devices, they all end up sharing bandwidth with each other, and you end up with sort of performance compromises, which on, you know, a standard desktop, maybe not a big deal, but if you're on a workstation and, you know, pushing big workloads, you don't want to have any of those limitations.
Right, definitely. And these motherboards are insane. This is crazy. I want three. So outside of that, let's go ahead and talk about ports, because ports on a motherboard are super important, right? So you guys have USB 3.1. You've got USB Type-A and Type-C, right? Yep. And more interestingly, you guys do support Thunderbolt, right? Thunderbolt 3, the new standard. So I can go in and
brand new
attach one of my amazing 4K Thunderbolt displays, or maybe more than one of my amazing 4K Thunderbolt displays, to this motherboard, right?
Yeah, all of the X99 boards that are new that we introduced recently have support for this Thunderbolt card, but it actually comes bundled with the deluxe motherboard. It's called the Thunderbolt EX3, and it uses Intel's Alpine Ridge controller, so it gives you one Thunderbolt 3 port, which is 40 gigabits per second, four times the speed of USB 3.1. So you can daisy chain multiple devices, including monitors. And then the card also has more USB 3.1 on it, including support for the power delivery spec. It can push up to 36 watts to devices that support it. So it's sort of a dual mode card. You get your Thunderbolt 3 and you get an extra dose of USB 3.1 with extra power, which is one of the more exciting things about the new USB standard, just the ability to charge devices faster and maybe in the future even things like laptops that you can charge over a USB port.
That is stellar, man. Yeah, sweet. And so I figure while we're here, Jeff, we're going to cover the basis, right? So we took care of the ports, that Thunderbolt EX card. But let's go ahead and talk about networking, right? Do you have it?
All the networking.
Dual wireless.
Gigabit Ethernet on the board.
Yes.
They're both Intel chips too, so you don't have to worry about drivers or any Intel chips. They just work. We've also got 802.11 AC Wi-Fi with a fast 3x3 antenna. So sort of ideal conditions performance is over gigabit speeds from wireless. And then on top of that, we also have Bluetooth that's integrated into the wireless
that
module.
Is awesome.
So if you got a wireless gamepad or something you want to connect or a headset, it's a deluxe board. So we have to put everything on it. I mean, even the fan controls, we have what's called a fan extension card. So the motherboard itself has very extensive cooling control. We've got a dedicated water pump header for all-in-one liquid coolers that make setup really, really easy. We've got a dedicated header for high amperage fans. So if you want to run a kind of industrial grade fan for really extreme overclocking, you can do that. We've got our usual array of temperature controlled fan headers on the board with stuff like graphical interfaces for tweaking fan profiles and automatic calibration. And on top of all of that, we have a separate fan extension card that lets you connect even more fans and even more temperature probes to the board. Because if you're building, a high-end workstation,
you might have
8 fans or 9 fans in there. You might want to monitor temperatures on your SSDs, on your graphics cards, and a whole bunch of zones. So with this fan extension card attached, you can power up to 9 fans and I think 4 different temperature probes, some of which are included in the box. So if you want to sort of completely wire your system for really optimized cooling, something that can be very, very quiet if you're not doing much, just sitting surfing the web or something, and then everything ramps up if you fire up a load and the CPU temperature starts increasing. So you have sort of the cooling that you need when you need it and the quietest possible solution when you don't actually require it.
That is awesome. So cooling is not an issue here, which is great. So and here's one thing that gets to me all the time, right? Whenever you have a system build, you plug your headphones up to it, you're doing what you need to do. You've got a ton of components there, right? And sound interference is a thing. It is a thing. It's always been a thing. I feel like it'll always be a thing. No one loves my ears. How do you fix it? Did you fix it? Tell me how you fixed it.
Yes, basically. I mean, every generation we try to make integrated audio better. We actually make discrete sound cards. And you can plug one of these into the board if you want. But what that does is it takes up additional slots. And for a workstation, you probably want to leave those open.
All the slots.
More graphics cards and more SSDs and things like that. So we've put a lot of effort into our integrated audio over the years. And every year we kind of add a new feature or add multiple new features. So the audio here has a whole bunch of stuff to clean up the signal. It has dedicated shielding for the codec and the traces. The actual circuitry on the motherboard is isolated from the rest of the PCB, so you don't get interference from other onboard devices. We've got a special depop circuit that takes out that sort of popping when you're attaching headphones or powering a system on.
Which, we also have ruins your eardrums.
Exactly. We're, and we've also got a pre-regulator power stage. So even before power gets to the codec, we actually go through and try to smooth it out so it's as clean as possible. And, you know, I reviewed sound cards and motherboard audio for a really long time. And then, you know, even 5 years ago, you didn't want to use motherboard audio. You know, sometimes you get hissing in the background, or if you, you know, if you fire up a CPU-intensive task or start playing a game, you get more hissing. And none of that is apparent on these boards. They actually sound really, really good. And they also have digital output. So if you have a receiver that supports things like DTS, you can get multi-channel, you know, pristine digital audio out of the board. Even in games, we have real-time encoding support. So if you want to get multi-channel audio digitally output to a receiver from games, that's all supported as well.
That's awesome. And this is all integrated, right? This is not a dedicated card I have to go get.
All I gotta do is integrated on the board. Plug my headphones in. Doesn't take up any slots. Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Dedicated amplifier chip for your headphones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, beauty. My next question, and I think, honestly, this is going to be my last question, because this is a tank of a machine. This is no longer a desktop. How do you guys power all this? This sounds like a monster build, requires a monster PSU, right? What are you guys using to keep this build going?
So we went to Corsair for the PSU and actually the case as well. So we've RMX 850-watt PSU. So 850 watts of power, which is loads for this system and actually enough to allow for future upgrades. And we've got modular cables with it as well. So you only have to use as many cable leads as you need for the components you got, which makes the whole wiring system much, much easier.
Easier.
Case itself helps with that. It's a Corsair Obsidian Series 750D. Kind of has a little bit of a cleaner, more refined look for, you know, kind of a business-worthy system. But what it also has is lots of little cutouts and cable tie-down points around the board that make clean routing really, really easy. So most of the cables are actually run behind the motherboard. You don't see them. Case has a big side window on it. So when you look through, you get this nice, clean-looking system that actually is worth lighting up. It's not something that you want to hide. Although if you take, you know, the right end of the system off, there's a little bit of spaghetti and stuff back there. So you kind of
see that
from the right side. And the case does a good job of, you know, hiding the rest of the cabling.
So Jeff, another thing, if I wanted to just see how far I can push my system, right? Like how far my processor is going to go before it explodes in my face and I have to cry a river. How can I do that with this motherboard? How does this motherboard help support overclocking?
Well, we got kind of two options on the motherboard. If you're experienced and you know what we're doing, or you know what you're doing, it's a whole slew of options in both UEFI and our Windows software if you want to change clock speeds and change voltages. Basically, all the standard overclocking controls are there for experts. But the really cool thing is we've also developed an automatic overclocking routine for beginners, people who maybe aren't as experienced. Or they've done it before and maybe not had good success. We've automated the process based on kind of the years of expertise that we've accrued overclocking things ourselves. So this is called five-way optimization, and it's literally a single click in the software. And what it'll go and do is basically treat overclocking the same way a human overclocker would. So it slowly increases the clock speed of your CPU, and every step along the way it tests for stability to make sure that your cooling can handle it and that your chip can handle it. And what this does is it helps get to the maximum speed that your individual chip can reach and that your individual cooling solution can handle, because every chip is different and there's a wide range of cooling from, you know, sort of standard air coolers to these big liquid coolers that we've got in the system here. So this five-way optimization process basically maximizes the performance for your unique configuration. We had really good success with it on this system. We used the top-of-the-line 10-core processor, and that chip normally peaks at 3 gigahertz for all core loads and 3.5 gigahertz, I believe, when only a single core is active. So through this five-way optimization process, we managed to get the chip up to 4.3 gigahertz for all core loads and 4.5 gigahertz for a single core. And that's a huge performance increase actually has real-world implications. You know, if you're rendering a multi-threaded workload, going from 3 gigahertz to 4.3 is a big deal.
It skyrockets you.
That cuts the amount of time it takes to get work done so that you can spend more time playing games or, you know, maybe getting more work done. But the key is that it is literally this one-click process, And by the time the algorithm is sort of finished tuning your system, it will have already tested stability for you. You can actually even go into the parameters for the optimization routine and tell it how long the stability test needs to be. If you want your stability test to run for, you know, hours on end, you can do that. If you want to test sort of encoding stability, which is quite a bit more demanding if you're encoding video versus, let's say, playing a game, you can set options for that. And this process basically takes all the guesswork and all the work out of not only overclocking your system, but it also has a fan optimization routine as well. So it'll go through and optimize the speed of all the fans connected to your system as part of this one-click process. So that basically allows, you know, even someone who has never put together a PC before to tune their system, you know, right up to the edge of what it's capable to, you know, with a single click without really having to learn the dark art of overclocking.
So it's more magic than it is science, right? So
There's a little bit of magic involved.
It's insane. I stay away from overclocking because I'm afraid of it, right? And now you're telling me that I can go and just tinker with my system with some awesome software and I don't have to break anything. And it won't break me, right?
Exactly. No. Oh, it's sweet. You know, if you have a few minutes to wait, you can sort of sit and watch as it increases the clock speeds and test stability and your fans ramp up and ramp down. And yeah, it's really simple to use and is easily the best sort of automated overclocking solution on the market right now.
Oh, this sounds great. Yeah, I can't wait to give it a try. This motherboard is mine, by the way.
CPU, right? You got to have them all.
Oh, yeah, I got to get it.
It's
the worst. Every episode I record with you people, I end up spending ridiculous amounts of money. Awesome. So, Jeff, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
I think that about covers it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again for stopping by, even though you didn't leave your bedroom. But thank you so much for stopping in for another awesome episode of OEM TV. I freaking love this motherboard, and I love this build. Oh, it's perfect. It's so pretty. So I'll be waiting for it at my doorstep. In the meantime, you guys, thank you for watching. As always, thanks for stopping in, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.